Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Monday. How are you, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, Nuggets, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, how are we doing?
Doing all right. UConn in the Final Four. We vibing right now.
How many UConn teams are in the Final Four?
Just one of them.
Oh.
The ladies were not able to pull it off. Got Gonzaga at the paint, though. We'll take that.
Yeah, you definitely zigged there, but it looks like, can you spell the state of Ohio for me real quick?
Ah, I see. More no. Like, oh, no. We did not. not much cooking on that front. It's fine, though. Anyway, we talked through the play-in teams and how they've been doing, some of the questions we had last week. This week, circling back to some of the contenders, or at least the playoff teams, or teams that are firmly in the top six right now. Before we get into that, some bookkeeping, per se. LeBron James made an earlier-than-expected return over the weekend, coming off the bench for the second time in his career against the Chicago Bulls. The Lakers did not win that game. Not only did they not win that game, we had some Pat Bev antics, which were hilarious, if not suspected to come at some point. One, did you catch that game live? And two, how did you feel that LeBron played in that one?
Yes, I did. Two, LeBron just looked like he hadn't played in a while. So I didn't come in with high expectations. It takes LeBron a little bit to rev up. I thought the Bulls just never let up in that game. And I think it's interesting with the Lakers. They always seem to have this either game, two game period where it's just, okay, who do we want to play?
Yeah.
And every time you think you got it figured out and you got your rotation down, then someone else does something. It's like, well, maybe we should play him. So in reference to the last podcast that we did, I asked about Lonnie Walker. It appeared he was up and went ahead and done some work and earned himself some more minutes in the rotation. Now that takes, Jerry Vanderbilt goes to 21, then Malik Beasley goes to 28. Now it's like, okay, if they can just hit the notes with their people, I think they'll be fine. I think the lineup still makes sense. It's just going to be, can they bridge the gap with LeBron back, keep those lineups going and get the harmony going. But I still think they're set up for the best amount of success that this group can have.
Yeah, I'm not super worried long-term. I guess this is more rhetorical of a question, but you can answer it if you'd like. Like, how do we just get Anthony Davis 18 shots a game, period? Because I don't understand how he has these stretches and then, like, LeBron comes back and what was it, like, 8 shots on Sunday? Like, I don't get what the disconnect is. I don't know how much of it is him. I don't know how much of it is Darvin Ham and what he called himself. I'm not subscribing to that. But, like, what is it? I'm just lost.
No, that was a weird one. That one kind of had, like, Sunday vibes. Like, there was a sequence where I feel like Ayo Dosunmu got a layup and the Lakers came down for pick and roll and Dennis Schroeder threw it over Anthony Davis's head. And in my head, I was like, okay, this is what's happening today.
Still early on the West Coast.
And then Vucevic is out there getting tossed for cursing in a different language. Side note, he meant whatever he said.
That man was upset.
Oh, no, he was done. I don't know what he said, but he meant every single bit of it. I feel like if you look at this game log, every 6 to 7 business days, you get a sub-10 field goal attempt game. Like 8 shots against the Bulls, 7 shots against the Raptors on March 10th, 5 shots against Golden State, 9 shots against Oklahoma City, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I feel like it's more of a bug than a feature.
Ah, I see. Well, that is sure to bug the fan base. On a more positive note, Kevin Durant seems like he's going to be back on Wednesday. On a not so positive note, as we record on a Monday afternoon, the Monday slate of games have not happened yet. We were all revving up for Joel Embiid versus Nikola Jokic part 2 on Monday night. And the Sixers are holding out Joel Embiid. And honestly, like, I don't really mind it. Like, as a fan, I'm disappointed. But, like, zooming out, did we see what Embiid looked like in the Phoenix game? Like, in terms of just movement and stuff? Like, I don't – and then you look at what Philadelphia's schedule has been during this road trip. I'm not super surprised that they're like, actually, we're not going to play you in the altitude game. I think that's fine. So I don't know. Where did you land on that?
You said we, and I thought you were speaking French again. I'm sure you're working on your game.
Okay.
For me, it doesn't move me. Like, it would have been great to see Jokic versus Embiid. But why can't we just be like, oh, that stinks? And then, like, what happened to just making jokes? And then just moving on. Like, what happened to that part? Like, I don't understand the influx of, like, oh, he didn't want the smoke. Did you watch the last time these two teams played? He seemed prepared for any and all of that. And, like, that, okay. Like, I can't do it with Embiid Jokic anymore, man.
You're just tired?
I am. You ever, like, eat a meal and it was okay, Nikias? But you're really secretly hoping there's no leftovers?
Wow.
That's me with Embiid and Jokic. Okay. Or like you open the fridge and you see it's still there. It's like, nah, a sandwich sounds good. Or you cook something and it's like, I think the kids like it. Yeah, they'll be good. That's me. Like, I just want to laugh. He said, I did what I did. I'm good. This is the end of the road trip. I'm cool.
That's all it is. Also, for the longtime Dunker Spot listeners, this is history. This is the earliest that Steve has proven that he is hungry on the podcast. We have not made it out of the introductory segment, and he has already made his first food reference. Not just a food reference, for multiple food references. I am impressed.
Hey, gotta take care of the Dunkers. Like, it's just... Are we yelling about who's the MVP, what the voting measurements are, load management, advanced numbers? Are we admitting to recency bias by saying this game held all the meaning in the world? Which one is it? Just pick your person that you like the most and say they did the best. It's the easiest thing to do this year. You want to say Embiid? Hey, here's a whole doc for you. You want to say Jokic? Here's a whole doc for you. You want to say Giannis? Here's a whole doc for you. You want to go out of left field and say Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? Have a blast. Just do it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it felt like when the announcement came out, it started with jokes. And then it devolved from jokes to takes. And then once it got into take land, it's just like, okay, we have jumped the shark. We have lost the plot. Respectfully, Messi, I do think, one, there is benefit to Embiid resting. Like, the workload he carries on the court on both ends kind of speaks for itself. This is a long road trip. You're going to Denver in altitude. It all makes sense, right? James Harden is supposed to come back. I wonder how much of this is, you know what? I can get my rest in. James Harden can run 65 pick and rolls at Jokic. And if the Sixers win this game because Denver can't stop anybody, it helps the MVP case too. And I don't have to do anything. I feel like that'd be pretty nifty.
Oh, that is something I did not consider. So you're saying if Denver does the thing?
Yeah. And we'll be talking about Denver on this podcast, don't you worry. But that would be at least a little bit funny. But in all seriousness, it feels like if we're actually upset about anything, like, one, as a fan, you want to see those two go at it. But beyond that, if you actually want to blame someone, it's the schedule makers. Uh-oh. Like that's where you go if you're actually, like, upset about it. There's no, I don't think there's any ducking going on with Embiid or anything like that. If you want to be upset, like, why is Philly playing this section of games at this portion of the season with the back-to-back over the weekend, then heading to Denver? Like, that's where your actual anger goes, if you're going to have it.
Well, probably because the venue was booked for something, something, something. Maybe a tournament was in Denver. Who knows? I don't know how any of this stuff works. It seems very hard.
Yeah, that is a job that I could do. It's above my pay grade, but...
Man, I could barely schedule a day. You mean to tell me I got to double check the Ariana Grande concert tour? I thought I was done.
Yeah, that sounds like
Like, come on, man. Like, Embiid did what he did. Jokic is going to do what he does. It's fine.
It should be anyway. What's not fine are the health statuses of Damian Lillard and also Ben Simmons. There's been talks of both of them potentially being shut down for the rest of the season. Ben Simmons dealing with the back issue, Dame dealing with a calf issue on top of Portland sliding in the playoff hunt right now, a few games out of the play-in. One, just hope both of those guys get better. Two, like, do you anticipate any, I don't know, like, these two seem kind of not linked, but it feels fitting to pair them together in this case, just because there's been so much smoke about, okay, what exactly is the future where they are? More so with Ben Simmons and Dame. I think Dame's been very clear. So naturally, we get Deshaun's tweet, or Deshaun's segment, rather, where he's saying, like, wouldn't be surprised if we see some serious conversations being had in the offseason, and it's going to start all of that over again. Wait a minute.
Did you design this show on purpose to try and torture me? You went right from Embiid Jokic to Blazers Dame talk with the sign of Ben Simmons?
Look, I am simply catching up on the latest news before we dig in. That's all. I can't control what that is. This is what we had. Want to talk about the Daquan Jeffrey signing?
Oh.
But we could.
No. All right. You've done an excellent job. My apologies. I'm sorry. I think the contrast is easy. I think Dame just wants to win. I think, he's had just an unreal season. Third in the league in scoring. He's really put it all together. 71 in the fewest minutes played, with the best true shooting percentage ever in a 70-point game. All-time Blazers leading scorer, which I never thought would happen. And on court, what do? Pick and roll, he's just hurting people in every kind of way you can. I got the pull-up. I can drive. I'm getting to the free throw line. Got the in-between game. I'm moving off the ball, catching and shooting in ways that maybe you weren't ready for this year. A great season with no results, unfortunately. And so I think for him, it's more like, hey, man, I really did my part this year. Mm-hmm. We have to fix this because I only got so many of these left. When it comes to Ben Simmons, it's more like, I don't even know if it's a Nets thing. It's just, can he get back to the place where he, A, physically can play basketball the way he wants to, and B, enjoys playing basketball?
Yeah.
And I feel like we've seen a push and pull with those things where one, you start to see flashes of one, the other kind of goes backwards. And we've seen Ben Simmons show his ability driving the basketball, being a threat, being aggressive. We've also seen him, quote unquote, making the plays that will make the Bird app go nuts, where you're wondering, what's he doing, da da da, all that good stuff. So for me, for him, it's less about where he can go and if he can just get himself right. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be in a tough spot to do that just because of the book that's been written so far. It's unfortunate. But, I think they tie together. Like, you could tell he knows his body isn't right where it needs to be. Mm-hmm. As he's trying to get his mind right. And that's, that push and pull stuff.
Yeah, I think that's kind of been, it's hard to say undersold just because of how long the back stuff in particular has been going on. But, that's all connected. I don't know if I'm going to drive with 110% force if I don't know how my back is going to respond. And trying to work through that in real time is not an easy thing to do. That's not a linear path to follow. And you compound that with what Brooklyn's roster was to begin the year versus what it is now. And the Jacques Vaughn comments about how to fit Ben into the rotation and the challenges of doing that. It makes sense that it feels like there was less rope given for him to kind of sort through that on the court. And then once you have more of the flare-ups health-wise, it's like, all right, let's just make sure you're okay. And I'm curious to see, just to bounce off of your point, one, just how he's feeling, period, physically and mentally, and if he's able to just fully get back. And then from there, what does Brooklyn do from here? Like, how do they want to shape the roster moving forward with the moves that they've made this year and with the pick capital that they have now? It's going to be interesting to track. I was going to say fun to track, but like so much of the conversation outside of this has just been messy, and it's sucked a lot of the fun out of that portion. But it's going to be interesting to follow for sure. Now, for the meat of the podcast, again, just want to touch bases on some of these contenders and some of these playoff teams, see where we're at, how we're feeling. If we have any burning questions, we can start with the top seeded Denver Nuggets, 50-24 record, first in the West right now. Elite offense, defense was bad, then it was good, then it was eh. They're still trying to sort it out. Steve, what questions do you have about the Denver Nuggets right now?
Well, this is always one of my fun things to do before the playoffs. Just do a little check-in on some of these teams that appear to be set and knocking on the door of a title, potentially. When it comes to Denver, I'm going to toss you a quick question. What if Nikola Jokic has the guard on the perimeter and they attack other people?
So this is just a, like, spacing Jokic somewhere and then going elsewhere?
Yes. So watching that Bucks game, right? I don't know if every team can do this, but if you have Aaron Gordon on Giannis and you have Nikola Jokic on Brook Lopez and Giannis is involved in the action and there are folks you don't want to switch on to Giannis, and now Aaron Gordon's in a drop and Nikola Jokic is on the weak side having to close out, what kind of doors does that open? Like, I feel like Denver feels good about most of their defensive personnel and matchups, so it won't be like this automatically. But I hadn't thought about this possibility too much. Mm-hmm. What do you think about it?
I think that's a good question. And to your point, like, it isn't something I thought about either, because so much of it is what is the coverage for Jokic? If he's at the level, what is everyone else doing? If Jokic is in a drop, will the point of attack defense be strong enough? Or will he be able to provide enough resistance at the rim? And something that you hammered on last year and something that continues to be worth tracking, what happens when you put Jokic in the action twice? If he gets the first action down, you put him in another screen, is he able to get back up to the level? Or if he's at a drop, can he contain, et cetera, et cetera? I haven't necessarily thought about, like, okay, what does Jokic the helper actually look like with volume? And I think part of that is just because teams haven't had to go to that well super often. Just by virtue of attacking Jokic when he's at the level, like, that gives you a numbers game. And with where Denver's rotations were at the beginning of the year, they were able to get easy stuff. And when it tightened up, they got stops. Denver scored in wherever they ran away with the West, it felt like. And so it hasn't really been a thing that it feels like teams haven't really hammered. Now that you mention it, though, I would be concerned, because I would worry about Jokic having to sink in and then close out. Because as much as we talk about, like, his actual, like, his screen coverage when he's the big defender or whatever, him having to close out and contain drives, like, that's never been something he's been good at. And so if you're in a position to where you could get him making those decisions, like, yeah, that can throw Denver for even more of a loop. And it's just another way for defenses to say, hey, we have your biggest guy on the court scrambling, and now the help behind him is small. And if you've tilted the defense elsewhere and then you have Jokic reacting to that, and now your good defenders are still trying to rotate over and they're smaller than Jokic, that can provide another issue. So, like, I think that's definitely something to keep track on. Do you see, I guess, what could be a counter to that if you're Denver? Is there a way to counter that?
Well, I mean, the counter is just, it just depends on who he guards, which is why it's not a massive concern for me, because I don't know how many bigs they wouldn't feel comfortable with making them pay. Mm-hmm. Like a Brook Lopez. And while there are some big wings in the West, I feel like they feel comfortable with a lot of those matchups for the most part. So I don't know if we get this apples to apples unless they play like maybe Minnesota and Cat's at the five. But even then, Cat's probably going to be in the action. So it's one of those things where it's like, this could be a thing if they get deep enough. But it just made me curious because it tied into my concern, which you mentioned, which was just what happens when he's on the move, getting to the level, getting back to help, then getting back to the level. That's the thing that is like, okay, that's my concern with him in a playoff setting. Mm-hmm. Outside of just pure scheme concerns, that's my biggest one. I don't know how many teams can replicate what Milwaukee was able to do. But maybe that's a finals question. Because if they face a Milwaukee or Boston, let's say they make the run, they're going to have to deal with that.
Yeah. Like, there really isn't going to be. I mean, there are rarely places that you can, like, comfortably hide Jokic. But with those two teams in particular, if we project the finals for them, yeah, you can't really do that. Like, good luck with Brook and the way that Brook's been playing post-All-Star break. Like, I don't think we, like, collectively, because I know we have, but I don't think we have collectively talked enough about how good Brook has been offensively this season, and particularly post-All-Star break. He's been doing a little bit of everything. And so given Jokic that assignment, like, that's going to pose some problems. And with Boston, if you're putting him on Hal Horford, if he's the starting five, depending on where Boston wants to go, and I'm sure we have some lineup questions we want to get into with Boston a little bit later, that could be fun. On the scheme point, though, do you feel any better about their scheme versatility?
I feel better in the sense that they've tried more things. Mm-hmm. So we've seen, you know, we know that Jokic at the level is typically their best one, but we've seen Jokic in a drop at times. We've seen them switch and double with Jokic, which is a wrinkle to try and combat. Okay, we might be getting hurt here. We don't want to do this. Let's try something else. We've seen them throw zone out there. So there's at least an attempt for versatility. My thing is going to be, how comfortable do they feel with those? And are they going to know when to toggle them? Mm-hmm. When to use them and when not to? Because the thing about Jokic is, we both know Denver likes to have him at the level that's typically his best coverage. He does have nuance to where he knows, okay, this isn't a real screen. I'm just going to stay right here. Mm-hmm. So we've seen those little wrinkles where he's improved as far as, okay, I'm not jumping out on this one. We're good. They got over. They slid under. We're fine. How do they handle the different matchups and the different types of teams that they're going to face to where maybe at the level is great one series, maybe drop is terrible the next series? Like, can they handle those type of swings? Do they feel comfortable enough being able to cycle through them at the very least? And know when to use which. That's probably my biggest concern.
That makes sense. Like, I think for me, and this is like a genuine question and something I just have to ask about. Like, I wonder, like, what goes into Jokic being in a drop versus at the level? Like, is he making that call? Is this just this is the gameplay and heading into it, we're going to follow it? Like, how do they toggle between that? Not even in terms of effectiveness, just in terms of what are the tails here? Or when is he going to do that? Because I think that makes it a little bit easier to parse through how versatile they can be, or like how certain matchups will kind of dictate that. I ended up writing about this recently as Denver's going through that 4-game slide and they kind of bounced back a little bit. Like, at least statistically, they've actually been solid in the drop. Post All-Star break, they are 6th in terms of points per possession allowed when in drop coverage. I don't think they're that good in terms of the personnel. I will say the point of attack defense has gotten better since that 4-game slide in particular. So, like, if Bruce Brown is bringing it, if KCP is getting to the level where I thought he was going to be the beginning of the year or heading into the year, if they're able to keep the ball in front, then I think they have a little bit more utility in drop than I anticipated. And that makes me feel better about their chances moving forward in the postseason. But even then, like, I guess I've just seen so much from the drop in the beginning of the year where it just didn't look great. And it wasn't as airtight up top as I thought it was going to be, that I still had concerns. Like, okay, how many coverages can they play and feel good about? And for me, like, it still feels like it's one.
I think it's back to what you said earlier. I think it is an adjustment type deal. I think they'll start at the level and then kind of see how it goes. And if it's not going so great, they might keep them back a little bit more. Or depending on the personnel, hey, let's give up this shot. It's kind of in between, back and forth. I'd be interested to see what their game plan defense is going to be come the playoffs. I do wonder how many teams will they actually go drop against. Like, first round on paper, they play the Pelicans.
Do you want to feed CJ drop? Well, I guess that's interesting.
It gets tricky. In theory, hey, we don't, but do you really want to hand Brandon Ingram and CJ a bunch of those in that setting?
Mm-hmm.
Or you risk being at the level and now New Orleans is moving the ball. Which one is it? That's where it gets interesting. Minnesota. Okay. Do you want to contain those Rudy roles and stay in help position and just hope Anthony Edwards doesn't do the thing? Are you risking pick and pop with Cat? Like, how does that work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Like, the New Orleans one in particular is interesting to me. Just like the offense, the ball movement within that offense has just been so on and off this year. Just like, do we want to feel comfortable or do we want to make sure that we just don't unlock things for them? And I think that'd be a fun little game within the game to track on that front. Where are you on Denver's second unit right now?
I like the talent of Denver's second unit. My issue with Denver's second unit is, where is the pressure point? Who is opening these things up? Who is unlocking things? I think in a playoff setting, they should be more comfortable with the personnel they have. Like, I mean, if you're having Jamal Murray lead that unit, or Michael Porter Jr. is getting some more minutes there, or it's Reggie Jackson doing Reggie Jackson playoff things, I think there's potential there. Who's the screener? Who's the roller? How the pieces fit? That's my deal. What is unlocking things? Why would I not just switch if you're going to play Thomas Bryant at the five? You have Jeff Green, you have Bruce Brown. That's great. Who's screening? Who's rolling? Zeke Nagy made the difference with him, his ability to space maybe. That's the one piece that's missing for me with that Denver second unit. What's the unlock point? You can't necessarily go matchup hunting. If you go pick and roll and team switch, okay, Jamal Murray may go off, but again, how are you getting a drive and kick? How are you opening things up? That's where my concern level goes to. I like the personnel. I like the talent. I don't know if I like the puzzle if you put it together.
I got you. Like, I do think, to your earlier point, they are trying to implement a second or sometimes a third starter with Jamal when Jokic isn't on the court. And I think that's a smart adjustment to make. They've been experimenting with Aaron Gordon at the five. I wonder how much juice they get out of him as a roller if he is the five. Like, I think as you hit the playoffs, like, I'm probably still just okay with switching that, depending on who's defending Aaron Gordon. I want to see more Jamal and PJ kind of headline those second units, and then trying to use Bruce Brown as your screener in those kind of lineups and unlocking him in that way. Like, I don't dislike Bruce Brown, the spacer. It just feels like it's a very limiting role for him. And I don't think that's the way you get the most out of him. I think the beauty of Bruce Brown, in theory, is the multitude of ways that you can use him.
It is. You just need other teams to cooperate. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that stands out to me. It's like, okay, this would be a great time to use Bruce Brown as a screener. Oh, wait, a wing is guarding him. Mm-hmm. So now it's become a switch. Or, hey, Jeff Green could probably give you some juice there. Oh, they're also switching him. You know, it's like, okay, where are we going? How are we opening things up? Are we just trying to find Jamal Murray? Like, that's where I get concerned with their second unit.
That's fair. And I think they were expecting to get more out of – I think they were expecting to get more out of Thomas Bryant, period. But I do think they were hoping to get more out of him as a roller. Because as we saw in that Lakers stint when AD went down, like – the defense still was what it was, but offensively, a guy that could roll and hurt you there, could hurt you on the offensive glass, and a guy that could pop. And in Denver, it's largely felt like the pop has to hit or you're just not getting it from them offensively. I don't think that's what they anticipated. And then on the other end, teams were able to just, they were able to get good looks when involved with him in action. And that's part of why he ended up falling out of the rotation. Seems to be bouncing back in terms of minutes now, but yeah, like I think it's just flanking Jamal with more. So even if it does turn into we need you to cook, at least giving him an MPJ who can also do the cook thing and to shoot over the top of people so Jamal doesn't have to carry the whole thing, I think would be helpful. Or just having better players out there so he has more space to operate. So even if it is a switch, he has more room to get downhill. Because with some of the second unit pairings with him, it's like, okay, we're switching this, we're keyed in on you, and also we can show help if the tempo isn't right. And that just feels like a lot of things stacking the deck against Denver in those non-Jokic minutes. And they can't afford to get blitzed in those minutes.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how many of those minutes there are. I will add this real quick, since you talked about switching. Do you have any concerns with non-Jokic switches just overall? past the second unit.
Now Jokic switches in which, I guess in what
capacity? We switch in everybody else.
It's something that I haven't thought super deeply about it. That's something worth keeping an eye on at the very least, because I think it just kind of bleeds into my overall like size concerns with Denver. And so like, I don't super worry about them like botching the switch. It's more so if you give up this matchup, what does it mean if they then involve Jokic in something? Like, okay, who's helping to end the possession at this point? Or who's going to be in help? Or who's going to be rotating behind Jokic if necessary? And so I think that's where my concerns lie. Like, ultimately, if they can find ways to flatten things out without putting two on the ball, like, I think you go for it. And to your earlier point, like, I'm glad that they are doing or attempting to do more things defensively just so teams don't have automatics to work with.
Gotcha. What about offensively?
I worry less about switching when Jokic is on the floor because I think he can still just dictate so much. And so even if you're flattening things out elsewhere, the ball can find him, you cut, and all he needs is a quarter of space to find a guy, or he can just get a bucket on his own, right? So I don't super worry about that portion.
I got another follow-up for you. Any concern with the unlocking Aaron Gordon in the postseason?
A little bit.
Mm.
A little bit. And this is something that we've like touched on throughout the pod, especially since that first Philly game, where it was like, hey, PJ Tucker, you guard Embiid. I mean, you guard Jokic. Embiid, you get AG, just roam. And I think there are some relatively simple counters to that kind of cross-matching to unlock some stuff. But I do kind of worry about Denver maybe tilting too much into let's use Aaron Gordon just because that's the opening. And if he can't knock down enough shots from the perimeter to at least make teams think, then I do get a little bit concerned about what it looks like for him. Because with Jokic on the floor and with Jamal Murray being healthy, like there are only so many on-ball routes for him, period. And so I do kind of worry about like what that balance is going to be, depending on how teams treat him. Where are you at on the Aaron Gordon experience?
It's just going to be how they use him, how they can open things up, and do they keep their balance, to your point, as far as making sure they're not just only trying to exploit that. Mm-hmm. But I think they've shown enough creativity with him as a screener, with his spacing, to be able to open things up. And you can always try and see if, you know, maybe you can scheme some doubles up or something like that. So I'm not too worried. It's just something that's in my mind. Like, okay, what if teams do that? What if they help off him? What if that's the key where it's like, okay, maybe we can't double Jokic as much as we want, but we can try and cause some havoc here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that makes sense. Any other questions on Denver before we move to Memphis?
Nope.
All right, with no further Denver questions, we can move to the Memphis Grizzlies, 47-27 heading into Monday night's slate of games. Only three games back of the Nuggets, thanks to a six-game winning streak that they're on right now. Jaren Jackson Jr. has been incredible. Like, we've talked mostly about his defense, defensive player of the year. Case, he's either first or second on most people's ballots, fake or otherwise. The offense has really perked up. You've touched on his driving and some of the post-ups earlier in the year, averaging over 26 points per game during this six-game winning streak for Memphis. One, how real do you think this development is for Jaren? And does that alter your faith level at all in Memphis's half-court offense with what Jaren has been able to show?
Well, as far as Jaren Jackson Jr. goes, and this is something that's been bubbling up to me, even going back to last year, we've seen the aggression from him. We've seen the mindset to seal and work to get positions and work to attack once he gets it and face up and drive and attack and back down and be patient. He's starting to put that together more. He's hitting first more. He's working for a spot more. And you can see that they are starting and continuing to use him in different ways. You don't know if it's going to be a post up. You don't know if he's going to screen. You don't know if he's going to get a down screen from someone. So those little type of actions where you can have Tyus Jones or John Morant screen for him down there on the block, and now he's coming off the ball. I mean, coming with movement, can attack, can shoot. That's where it gets fun. And that's where I think it can translate a little bit more in the postseason, because there's different ways that they are using him as opposed to him just going to get it. And you can start plays with him. You can end plays with him. It just kind of fits into the flow. Now, as far as their half court offense, the main question is going to be, what is their pace going to be? What is their tempo going to be? So it's not necessarily a Jaren type deal. I do like that if he has it going, they have a comfort with going to him in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. So it's at least a little bit more than just, hey, Ja, pick and roll, please. So I think I would tilt there. But if they're not going to run the same variety of things, what's the impact? You know, That's where I'm still at. Like the big thing with Memphis in the half court is, are you going to start your stuff early? Are you going to move your bodies in the ball? Can you stop doing prevent offense with 10 minutes left in the fourth? And I don't know if Jaren solves that. It gives them another piece that they can definitely go to. Mm-hmm. And again, the creativity and the action that they're using for him. You know, Ja comes up, dribble handoff to Jaren Jackson Jr. Now he's driving downhill. It's tough to necessarily prepare because he's a moving piece in that way. But I don't put it all there.
I got you. I think that's mostly how I felt about it. Like it at least gives them another option. And I think if they do have the same tempo issues, at least it's gone from Ja save us to Ja or Jaren save us. And I think that's an important development. And once you factor in what Desmond Bane also can do on or off the ball, the process needs to improve, period, for Memphis in that half court in terms of their tempo. And we've seen that in the postseason as well. So like that doesn't change. I think I feel better about them bailing themselves out of those self-inflicted issues. And if they're able to solve the tempo stuff consistently, then I just flat out feel better about their offense. Because I think we know what Ja can do. Like, Ja can just get to the paint whenever he wants to. Get a shot at the rim, get to the free throw line, or both. And now Jaren, who has been one of the best big man drivers in the NBA all year, and just factoring in this six-game stretch, like he's been, in terms of efficiency, sixth in terms of points per possession off drives. A Jaren Jackson Jr. that can get to his spots whenever he wants to, could be used, utilized in a multitude of ways, and can get to the free throw line at a high clip, that's a dangerous dude. And giving Memphis another one of those guys, like, it just makes me feel a little bit better about him.
Are you ready for an unfair and unpopular question?
Sure.
Can he stay on the floor?
I hope so. I think it's the only way that I can answer that. It's been fun to track him swatting everything in sight. Hey, he's doing this and he's not fouling as much. Wait, he's fouled out of two of the last four games. Wait, he's solving it. Wait, he's in foul trouble again. I just want him to get it, I think, is ultimately where I land. I hope he's able to stay on the floor. If he isn't, and I guess this would be like my question to throw back at you, like if he isn't able to stay on the floor consistently, like how equipped are the Grizzlies to handle that in light of the Brandon Clark injury?
It's gonna be a tough part of the equation, mainly because of how important he is for them defensively. I think Xavier Tillman can do a job. I don't know if he could do that job. And Steven Adams, I don't know if he's coming back, when he's coming back. So you just don't have the same amount of options that you used to have if you're Memphis. And you definitely don't have another one of those. So it'll be interesting.
I guess we'll go to the second unit real quick. How have you felt about Luke Kennard in Memphis? We talked a little bit about it on the trade deadline show. We haven't really circled back.
It's tough. Because, I mean, as we talk about him right now, I believe he's hit 14 total threes in his last two games. So probably should be a thumbs up. I think he's hit four more threes in like six out of eight. So he's doing what he's supposed to do. How much value is that? And how much room is there for him to grow? Or is he just going to be specifically that guy for this team? Is it just make shots or that's it? And can he make enough shots to make up for teams saying, oh, you're on the court? This is the playoffs? Come here, pal. Mm-hmm.
Who does he
play with, too? Like, is there a room where you could put him in a Jaren at the five lineup? Because if you're telling me Memphis could figure out a way to do Jaren, Luke Kennard, Desmond, Dylan Brooks, and Ja Morant, well,
that's pretty neat.
I'm intrigued. But if it's just, hey, he can really, really shoot it and he's coming off the bench and playing the stint, is there a ceiling on it? Like, is he ever going to be a closer or anything like that?
I got you. Like, this is where I was kind of struggling with my Luke thoughts, because I feel like he's played really well. And I still find myself, like in the back of my mind, like, okay, what does this mean though? Because one, like, the shooting is very valuable, and smaller sample since is just the Memphis games right now. But like, this is the highest 3-point rate he's ever had. Like, over 80% of his shots are coming from three. So he has become the lighted up guy from behind the arc versus the knockdown shooter who can run 10 pick and rolls if you need him to. He can still do that in terms of ability, but it's very much been Luke get him up. And I wonder, one, how frustrated must Ty Lue be to see Luke Kennard just pulling with reckless abandon now after having to say multiple times, hey, you shot 7 threes tonight? Cool. It could have been 14, bud. Get him up. And so it's been nice to see this aggressive version of him. And I'm with you. Like, if you can find a way to close with him consistently, I think he provides some real value. Again, like, even with some of the tempo issues that Memphis may have in the half court, ultimately, that's a guy you just can't help off of. And we've seen him, going back to the Clipper days, like, he's a willing, like, go screener or just inverted screener. Like, that's somebody you can have fun with screening for Ja, screening for Jaren. If you want to let Jaren handle, or if you want to use him to set a pin down for Jaren, like, he's a very valuable piece to create mismatches for you. It's just, you know, to your point, will the defensive infrastructure be strong enough to where you can insulate him in some of these lineups? I wonder, is there a world that he closes over Dylan? Or do you just not see any circumstance where that makes sense for Memphis?
If Dylan fouls out,
that's it. Okay.
I don't think he closes over Dylan just because of how valuable Dylan is to their defense and how they trust him defensively. But again, I guess it's a positive for Memphis to be able to say, hey, we could go double big. We could go 2-point guards. We could go small. Like, they have options, I guess. I guess I'll broaden your response out to a bigger question. Do you trust their defense to hold up in the playoffs?
I say yes, but it feels a little bit more rickety to me, because I just don't know what to expect behind Jaren. And like, some of that is just Steven Adams has been out for a while. And so if Jaren goes down, like, you know, I'm a fan of Xavier Tillman, like, they will try different things with him scheme wise, but like, I can't say I feel great about him executing multiple schemes. And I definitely don't feel the way that I feel about Jaren in terms of cleaning up other people's messes. And, you know, aside from Dylan, Memphis isn't great at the point of attack. And so it's just like, if Jaren is able to stay out of foul trouble, like, the answers affirm yes. Because he's been really good. Dylan Brooks, antics aside, has been really good defensively this year. I think Ja pre-suspension and stuff, like, I think Ja's honestly been fine defensively in the games that I've watched from him. Like, I don't really feel awful about their personnel, but it does feel like the depth isn't there like it was last year. And because of that, I think I'm just in a weird place with him. Like, even during the win streak, it's like a 116.5 defensive rating, and that's like middle of the pack. Again, 6-game sample, bite-size sample. But it hasn't been the same. Memphis is the best defense in the NBA by far, like we saw in that early stretch when Jaren first came back. So I'm monitoring it. I still say yes, but I feel a little bit worse about what's behind, like, their initial guys, if that makes sense.
I hear you. And that's one of those things where mine goes to, okay, you got to remember, teams are going to attack differently in the playoffs. It may be more Ja Morant, come get in action. It may be more, hey, Jaren, we're not going to let you help as much. You also come get in the action. And let's see what the help looks for you, what that looks like. So I ask because the defense is really important to Memphis. If nothing else, for them to have that base, to be able to get stops, to get out and run, and not have to be in the half court so much.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see, because I think that's a big piece of their run. Do you have enough confidence in their other folks this year?
I would like to. I just have a lot of question marks outside of, like, Tyus. And like, I know what Luke does, but it's like, okay, what is his utility in the postseason? Like, how much runway will he get with the second unit? And then from there, it's just a lot of these guys are just young. And like, even when they play well, it's like, okay, cool. I believe that they're talented. I know Memphis trusts them. This isn't something that I haven't seen from a Memphis team before. How are defenses going to treat them? How are offenses going to treat them? So, like, honestly, I don't know. I'm just in a weird place with Memphis, period.
A dunker spot staple, Nekias.
Don't do this.
Me saying, hey, Memphis is going to be the 2 seed, and Nekias being like, I don't know what they are. But,
and the answer ends up being the 2 seed, you know?
I guess it's just, it's less that they can't produce for him. It's more, what is it going to look like in the playoffs? And, like, it feels like the number has grown from, okay, can these 2 people hit in the playoffs to, oh, wait, can these 3 people hit? Like, is it going to be Santi? Is it going to be Roddy? Is it going to be Conchar? Is it going to be, do you trust all of them in this setting?
Yeah, like, that's the weird place. So that's, we've talked about all these players at different points of this season and last season on the pod. Like, individually, I like all of them. It's like, okay, it's now because of moves or injuries or what have you, it's gone from, hey, this guy can do this, to you have to do this for this to work. And that's a little bit different. And when I compare that to some of the other second units, you know, among the West, that's where it's like, let's see. I don't know where my faith level is right now. Not that they can't, but in terms of, I feel good about this. Like, I'm not there yet with Memphis. And maybe that just comes with watching this final stretch and like, okay, I've seen what I need to see. I feel better heading into the postseason. But like, as of right now, I'm just kind of iffy on the others right now, especially in terms of just like projecting forward their playoff utility. Actually, on the Jaren front, because it's something you brought up early on in the season, it's like, hey, what does Jaren look like spaced defensively? Do you feel any better about that alignment, or is that something you're still keeping an eye on?
No, I feel better about it.
Okay.
Too many plays where he's helped, recovered, cleaned things up. I'm in a better spot.
Here we go. If we don't have anything else on Memphis, we can move to Sacramento. I think you know what my primary question with the Kings is going to be. Well, first, 45-29, third in the West. They have a chance to clinch their first playoff spot. I mean, their first playoff berth in a very long time, later on tonight. Very exciting time to be a Kings fan. My question is simple. How worried should we be about their defense?
I mean, it's going to be the thing that people are going to be concerned about, and I totally understand. For me, I still would like to see what it looks like in a playoff setting. And for me, it's kind of two different things with their defense, right? I think the number one thing we can think about is the scheme. They're going to give the effort. They're going to fly around. They're going to recover. The issue is going to be if they get hit outside of their scheme. If it's a scenario where my mind goes back to when they played Boston and Boston was able to just hit them with dribble penetration. So this is a scenario where it's just the pick and roll that's hurting the Kings defense. You can adjust to a degree. You can alter to a degree. You can live with certain things to a degree. You can rotate behind it. If it's that plus dribble penetration, or it's dribble penetration that's just hurting you, plays outside of the play, outside of the set, the math changes a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm trying to figure out, where's the balance going to be there? Because they're going to give the effort. There's no doubt about that. I think you could argue, hey, what about the personnel? If teams are attacking and slowing their game down to go with one-on-one matchups, I think the Kings might like that at times. That might take a level of pressure off. They may not like it in the fourth so much, but I think there's an area where they could be like, hey, sweet, we don't have to do as much. But if they are able to get into a position where they are locked in on specific things and that effort now has a purpose behind it, and, you know, we're jumping this pick and roll, we're doubling this post up, these are automatics for us. Does that enhance the effort they give defensively with a more focus, or is this a scenario where, okay, we're just getting beat? We're getting beat. We also have this 2 at the level scheme that's getting beat. We can't really switch. We did switch. We got beat. The drives are hurting us. We're getting beat.
Yeah, and I think just with Sacramento, this is where I'm starting to get concerned about it, which feels weird to say considering like how good, like record wise they've been post All-Star break. It's concerning to me that the defense has gotten, at least statistically, that the defense has gotten worse as the year goes by. And I'm glad you brought up the Boston game, because one of the things that's been troublesome to track with Boston is like, hey, how often are they getting to the rim? Because early in the year they were doing this. Multiple ways to use their stars, flowing from outside to inside to get the drives, get the drive and kick, whatever, whatever. Then just kind of stop. Then that Kings game, particularly from the second quarter on, we're just like, yeah, we're just going to beat this guy off the bounce. And like, I don't feel like their containment has been the same. I do think the effort has been great. I mean, the effort has been there. Like, I haven't felt great about their rotations. And like, I remember, you know, we had Mark Jones on not too long ago. He's talking about defense and, you know, there are some openings just inherent with their scheme. But one of the shining lights for him was that, hey, in the fourth quarter, the Kings have been a good defensive team. They've shown that they can buckle down. Post All-Star break, they're 27th in defensive rating in the fourth quarters. And it's just like,
man, this man came back for this man came back for revenge against the Kings defense. Nope.
Not revenge, just as like, hey, your foundation is insane offense, getting timely stops defensively at this point. Because like, just in terms of overall defensive rating, like it hasn't been good all year long. If the timely stops don't come at this point, and to your point, if it's not just, hey, the scheme opened some things up, we got to be crisp or else. If it's now just we can't contain the ball anymore, then yeah, I feel worse about the Kings heading into the postseason, even if they've been the most like stable team in the West, which is a wild thing to say. But like, their, you know, their formula has been the same all year long. We're going to outscore the heck out of you. We're going to fly around on defense. It hasn't been good, but at least we know what we're trying to get to. And it's felt like it's shifted from like that same formula exists, but the defense portion has gone from we do enough to now we're scrambling all the time, it feels like.
Well, again, that's why I want to see what it looks like with a playoff gameplay. Are they now anticipating just as much as they are reacting? I don't know if this is a defense that can ever get to the dictating phase, but I think they can anticipate. I think they can react. It's just going to be interesting. I think this is a team that could probably really defend the sets pretty well. But in today's NBA, is it going to be the next 14 seconds that hurts them? Or does that boost them? Like, I'm on the in-between. Because I could see where their minds are, the effort is, but if you can't keep the ball in front and your defense isn't loaded up and you're always closing back out, that could get tough. Mm-hmm. I have a question for you.
Okay.
I'm going to flip it on you. How worried should we be about the offense?
Huh. Are you worried about the offense? Not that, sorry to answer your question with a question, but.
And that's how you feel?
No, it's not. I guess to answer your question first, I'm not super concerned about the offense. One, it's just been very good still. And I think even if teams get more keyed into what they're trying to do off ball, if they're more ready for, okay, we can't just defend the set. We know they're going to cut. We know the flash from Sabonis is going to come. We got to be keyed in on that. Even if you take that stuff away, their top two with De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis can still create advantages one-on-one. And so I'm still pretty confident they can generate efficient offense.
My concern is that teams start to switch and they take a little bit of the air out of the Kings offense. They take a little bit of the flow out of the Kings offense. Maybe you throw a wing or a guard on Sabonis and now you make his actions a switch. How do the Kings process and keep going through their options? Can they keep cutting? Can they keep driving? If those switches and unders are in effect, basically keeping the ball on the perimeter, if there's no paint touches, does that hurt the base? And this isn't a team that's, while they do have some, and they will post a bonus, they will let De'Aaron Fox go to work and pick and roll, they aren't necessarily a spam type team, if that makes sense. to where outside of the fourth quarter with De'Aaron Fox, where, hey, we're just going to do this. And if they lean too far into the post-ups, does that throw the rhythm off more? So I want to see, I guess my concern is, does the physicality worry, or are they able to just wear teams out?
Mm-hmm. Like, I guess I'm less concerned about that because, like, again, like, I think at minimum, De'Aaron Fox can still just get to the paint whenever he wants to. And even if it devolves more into Sabonis post-ups, he's a really efficient post scorer, and he can knock so many people off their spots. And ultimately, if he does that enough to where you're sending the help, like, that's two to the ball, like, that gets the Kings back in their flow in theory anyway, and get defenses moving.
I'm downloading the Celtics game. I'm downloading one of the Suns game. I'm looking at that and I'm saying, hey, if we can do this, we'll get them. We'll take it. Mm-hmm. That's fair. They can't survive that. Is why I'm concerned about it. Mm. If the offense isn't humming, it don't matter.
Not getting enough stop. Yeah.
No. So that's why I asked the question. Not that they can't overcome it, but if that becomes a problem.
Oh, if that becomes a consistent problem, it's cooked. Like, as much as a playoff team can be cooked, obviously they're good. But
I'm looking to battle them, try and get them as late in the clock as possible, and do it over and over again. Much easier said than done, but just figured I'd ask.
No, I think that's fair. I do think teams are going to get more comfortable. Like, I'm curious about the potential, like, cross matches against Sacramento, depending on who their first round opponent is going to be. Because you brought up, like, the wing idea to put on Sabonis and turn those into switches. You got to be the right kind of wing to get that assignment early. Because the Kings also aren't shy with just throwing it to him, like, all right, you go ahead and go. Or De'Aaron brings it up, he's on the left side, just kick it to him and clear, like, all right, have fun. And then flowing out of that immediately. It's not always De'Aaron does something, Kevin Herter does something, Sabonis splashes, and now 12 seconds left, he gets to do some stuff. They're fine with letting him initiate some stuff too.
But that's the secret. We want him to post up, because then you're not doing the other stuff.
Well, yeah, I got you. I understand. I guess I'm more so harping on the they have enough to overcome it. I think that's where I land on that side. Like, you are 100% valid. And again, like, if they get to the point to where they aren't able to overcome it, or if it bogs them down too much, like, yeah, it's cooked. Like, I don't have much trust in their defense to, like, hold a good offense now. I guess I'm still optimistic that Sacramento's offense is scoring.
Can I be respectfully messy real quick?
Yeah.
So they have survived, and they're going to be three, potentially two, depending on math and all that good stuff. How much are they rooting for Minnesota and New Orleans right now?
I'd say quite a bit. Because I don't know if they... you know, like a 3-6 with Golden State, which is funny because on the Mark Jones episode, like, hey, this might be one you can talk yourself into. But with the way the defense is trending, that gets a little tougher. I guess we'll see with Sacramento. Let's move to the Phoenix Suns, 39-35 heading into Monday's slate. I will start with a Chris Paul question for you. What level of angst do you have with Chris Paul right now?
None. I want to see what it looks like when KD comes back. Honestly. For me, the playoff version is still different, to which he can still get to his spot and figure it out. Now, can he still do that consistently? Are teams just going to switch, and are they going to attack him on the other end? My answer may very well change here in a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. But I'm not necessarily thinking, oh, he's coming in a bad way. If he can defend and he can navigate that offense, he'll be fine. If they have KD and Booker. Now, if they had no KD, I think I'd probably be a little bit more concerned, because they need him to execute at a higher level. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
You? Like, you? Do you have any angst with your family?
It's a good shot. A little bit of angst. Not that he's played poorly, because he haven't. But like, the pull-ups in general haven't hit the same this year. Like, he just couldn't make anything to start the year. And he's far away from that. But it still hasn't been masterclass mid-range shot maker Chris Paul yet. And something that you touched on throughout the year is just how keyed in he is on finding Ayton on the roll. He's not hunting his shot. Like, I think part of that is just trying to save up some juice for the postseason. So I am giving a little bit of leeway there. But like, I certainly don't see the burst at this point. And I think the jumper is even more important than it's ever been for him. And it just hasn't fallen in a high enough clip. And I think teams are comfortable putting him in action. He's smart enough to navigate some of it, but you can't really do anything against size at the end of the day. And with no KD right now, you can really feel if they send extra help to try to send try to help Chris out, because that length and that ranginess just isn't there behind it like that. And compounding that is DeAndre Ayton's been out for a little bit too. And so it's just been a little bit different. Like, I do think, to your point, as they get healthier, it'll be easier to navigate things defensively with him. And something that I've said once the trade was made was like, Mikal Bridges is a better defender than KD, in my opinion. But I think KD's better equipped to deal with the Chris Paul problem in terms of length and trying to clean things up behind him. And so if he's healthy, I have less concerns about that. And then offensively, you got another 30-point per game guy in the lineup. Like, no, you don't need Chris to nail those jumpers to the same degree, because ultimately you can just default to Devin Booker and Kevin Durant do the thing. Also, Devin Booker just quietly averaging like 32 post All-Star break. Looks more comfortable when getting two to the ball now.
Oh, Devin Booker's been insane. He's been insane this season. We all forgot. I mean, literally, had he not had that stretch where he was out, he'd probably be in one of those conversations that people like to have, because he's been so much better as a playmaker and a scorer. He's been automatic.
With that, so I would imagine you are more comfortable or more confident in him this postseason with the improvements that he's made offensively.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's seen a lot of different coverages. And again, he has moved from just making plays to anticipating plays, reading the defense and kind of knowing exactly what's coming. And I think that work is going to pay off. Now, the question is, and I still think this to a degree, is mixing coverages the best thing you can do against Devin Booker? And how hard is that going to be when Kevin Durant also exists? Because in theory, you want to show Devin Booker multiple things. You want to show him a trap. You want to show him a drop. You want to double him on his drive, maybe a post up. You want to try different things just to try and keep him out of rhythm. If he sees the same thing over and over, he's gotten really good at just taking that apart. Mm-hmm. How much does KD being around now just take that off the plate? How much does KD being around just take automatic doubles and switches out of there?
Yeah, and then once you think about how smart the Suns are with where they space their guys to, you go Booker, Ayton, pick and roll, and now your spacers are KD, Chris Paul, and insert fifth. And I guess we could have the fifth conversation at some point. Book, he's just gotten so good at manipulating defenses at this point, making quicker reads, making smarter decisions. If Kevin Durant just gets to station out and take catch and shoot jumpers because you're throwing extra attention at Devin Booker, have fun with that. And even this version of Chris Paul can keep the ball moving against an advantage if he's the outlet pass. And that can still lead with Kevin Durant is now facing a tilted defense. And with how Phoenix moves the ball around, that can still turn into Devin Booker has the ball back against a still tilting defense. And we know how good he is at attacking tilted defenses and getting to the line. And even if he doesn't get to the line and gets a guy in his face, he can just drill a jumper in his face. So I've just been very impressed with what Devin Booker has done this year. It stinks that he missed so much time with injury. Like, with you, like he's just an all NBA guard for sure if he doesn't miss as much time as he does. That's how well he's playing pre-injury. And certainly how well he's been playing as of late. It's just a lot of time missed for him. I think I'll go to the second unit really quickly. How do you feel about their backup big room right now?
I feel fine. I don't have any concerns with their backup bigs. they all do their job pretty well.
Okay.
And they're all only going to have to play so many minutes. So I'm not necessarily thinking, oh, this is a whole. I mean, it's a good thing they have at least two they can go to, whether it's Biombo or Landale, or they can go small. So if one's not working, you got another one. If the other one's not working, you go somewhere else.
I think that's the part where I've been wanting to see more of, and we just hadn't had the opportunity because KD's been out. Like, we saw very early on, I think game two or game three of the KD experience, we saw a KD at the five lineup. It was like, huh, okay, they're going to try it. And then we lost KD in a pregame shoot around. It's like, well, I guess we'll see. So I guess an overarching question I have with the Suns team is like, what do those lineups look like with a larger sample? And what are the combinations going to be with KD at the five? Like, who are the wings that they supplement alongside him if he's at the five?
Well, I mean, the fact that I think they tried TJ Warren at the five recently tells me that's coming. KD, Chris Paul, Book, and I guess it depends on personnel. Do we see Okoji and Craig? Maybe. Maybe it's Terrence Ross plus one of those defenders. That's about where my idea can go.
I feel like just in terms of...
Oh, Damian Lee maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think in terms of size, you put Craig in pencil. Because I do think that can get maybe... That could probably get a little too small if it's like Okoji and like Terrence Ross, or Okoji and Landry Shamet. Or if you want to go with both of the CPs plus Book, like Okoji and KD. Like, they can really have some fun offensively, but like the size is something that I keep an eye on, especially since you're already trying to like insulate Chris Paul if you can. I think my larger question with this is just like, what is Monty Williams' appetite for KD at the five, period? You have these questions about how you surround KD, and then also like how much strain do you want to put on KD to be your primary rim protector? Because I think you get the most value out of him defensively if he's your secondary guy. And something that I was excited about seeing with Phoenix, like, hey, Ayton and KD together, Ayton can play more aggressively now because he's got KD behind him. If KD is just the guy that can clean it up, he's good enough to do so. But can you move KD around?
I think it's conceptually to have something in the back pocket for, in all likelihood, based on what we're seeing now, the Clippers, for the Warriors. Let's have this here just in case we need it. And if we advance, we may need it even more.
Okay. It seems like a... Actually, did you have Suns questions? I thought I just threw some stuff at you.
No, we're good. I got to most of mine.
Okay. All right, then. We can transition to the Clippers then. What are your Clipper questions? Where does your angst lie with this Clippers team, if any?
What's more important, the shooting or the defense for them?
I think it's the defense for them. One, I think that's a really good question, because I think the shooting is wildly important in light of who they are as a rim team. They need those jumpers to fall. But I also think I worry less about the traditional spacing, just because, you know, Paul George when healthy, and especially Kawhi, spacing almost doesn't matter to those guys, considering the type of shots they like to take and how good they are at knocking out contested looks. Kawhi has been insane in 2023. It has been a wild shot, contested shot maker for a long time. But the defense just has to be at a level. They can't afford to get into track meets with people, I don't think. And so I think they need the defense to give them a foundation. And even if they don't flow offensively, they have the shot to the tough shot making to kind of carry them the rest of the way.
Okay. Are the Clippers a team that you trust more in the playoffs, despite what you've seen?
I lean yes. I think they're very much built for the postseason. And you kind of bake in some wonkiness with them just because Ty Lue is going to be trying things out with lineups. And part of trying things out with lineups is because you don't know, at least early on, like, okay, what is Kawhi's availability going to be, et cetera, et cetera. And so you deal with that. I think in a vacuum, you look at the Clippers, if they figure out who their nine guys are and you get them in a postseason series and they just get the game plan against a team, like, they can beat anybody. And so, like, inherently, I lean yes. And it feels a little shakier this year just because they've had, like, they threw in the Russ move and they had to reconfigure some things out. They get Kawhi and PG rolling together. Now PG's out. Norm Powell has the slow start, really heats up, puts himself in the sixth man of the year conversation. Now he's been out the last 4 or 5 games. And so I kind of worry like what that does to kind of alter the chemistry isn't the right word, but I guess just like the consistency with their lineups and just what they're trying to accomplish. I wonder like how much that throws that off just because they've had some really poorly timed roster moves / injuries and shuffling around like that. But I still think this is a team that's designed to like really peak in the postseason.
I think they're going to be much tougher in a playoff series than on a Wednesday night. Having to beat them 4 times with the amount of combinations they can throw out there, with what they can do defensively, with their smaller lineups, I think that can get tricky. I think that's been the hallmark, I think, of the Clippers in the playoffs is we can kind of figure things out. Takes a little bit sometimes, but they can kind of figure some things out. And so it's odd for me because I have to balance some of the issues I see offensively with the tempo, defensively that's not there, the paint touches, the shooting, with the fact that they can hit another level. If they hit that other level, it's going to be tough to deal with. Now, the wild part is the 2 teams we just talked about may end up facing each other in the first round, which means one of them is going home.
Yeah, which fun offseason chatter for that, huh? If you trade for KD and lose in round 1, buddy, if you have the Kawhi and Paul George era and they lose in round 1, buddy, it just gets kind of nasty. Should be incredible hoop if those 2 teams meet in the first round, but
and I mean, we're doing all this doomsday stuff. It's Phoenix, Clippers, and Golden State. Watch it be Golden State, Minnesota in the first round or something like that.
Like, wait a minute, how did the Clippers end up in the play? Yeah, it'd be one of those. I guess somewhat of a niche thing. Are you more concerned about the Russ minutes or the Morris minutes?
Neither.
Okay.
I guess they just have options. Like Marcus Morris is firmly, this is what he does for this team. Mm-hmm. If it's working, it's working. If it's not, we can go somewhere else. And Russ is firmly, you're going to play these minutes. If it's working, you can keep going. If not, Eric Gordon, please finish this game. Mm-hmm. So that's where I don't get as concerned with them because of the willingness to shuffle and rotate some of these guys. It's tricky to find which ones and how, which leads to my question. Do you like their closing lineups? Do you like the fact that they have the options they do? Can that help them in a series or going from series to series? Do you see it being Eric Gordon, Norman Powell, Kawhi, PG, insert player? Is there enough size? Is there enough of a blend? Can they hit the notes?
I think they can. I think just the funny part of the Clippers roster construction and just having like 13 NBA players on the roster is that in theory, like, yeah, they have a potential answer to literally any problem that you throw at them. To answer, I guess, my own question, I definitely understand the neither answer for you. I just wonder, like, at least checking the vibe of, like, Clippers Twitter or my eye on Clippers Twitter, like, those 2 players seem to be the one that are, like, really firmly entrenched in Ty Lue's rotation. And we know the volatility that Russ can play with. I do think he's just been good as a Clipper. So, like, not throwing any shots there, but like there is a level of volatility that comes with him. And with Marcus Morris, to your point, he is very much I do this. And for a pretty significant stretch at this point, he hasn't been doing that. Like the shot making just hasn't been there for him. And if the shot making isn't there, just like, okay, what exactly do you do? And to, you know, with referring to an earlier conversation that we had, like, you made the case well. Like, it's easier to kind of insulate what Marcus Morris does when he's playing with these starters. So if he isn't producing with the starters, like, where can you play him? And so that's where I'm just like, okay, what do you do here? And then you kind of wrote that into Robert Covington just doesn't exist, I guess. Which just feels like...
What do you mean?
No, I mean, like, he just hasn't been a consistent part of the rotation this year. It's like he is a theoretical answer, but it hasn't been someone that they've called on a ton this year.
He feels very much, we know what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And we don't know when you're going to do it. But just be ready to do it.
Yeah. But no, that's kind of my general angst with, like, not even angst, but just keeping an eye on, like, what those minutes are looking like. Because people are very upset when Russ is not playing well and he's playing. And Marcus Morris, I don't think it's been a great year for him, period. And so I think that just kind of adds into the overall frustration of, like, what are we...
Now, Bud, when have you ever thought it's been a great year for Marcus Morris?
Hey, come on. Come on. Don't.
Wait, but answer the question, though.
Don't do this. Like, but, he's had good years, you know.
What? Okay. Okay. What's your next Clippers question, buddy?
Oh, geez. No, those were my major ones. Like, are you intrigued with the Bones Highland minutes?
Yes, but I don't know how many he's going to get in the playoffs, especially if they're healthy. Mm-hmm. I like what he can bring for them with the drive, with the juice offensively, but then again, it's almost all like the Clippers have guards who don't have size, so teams can just be like, hey, come here. So I'm intrigued by that, how that balances out, but I still like the Clippers mix, man.
Okay. And are you at all concerned about the overall workload for Terrence Mann?
No.
I think there's room for more. Okay.
I'm not. Are you?
I'm like, I wish he played a little bit more than he does. Like, I don't think it's a red flag problem, if that makes sense. And to your earlier point about Russ in general, like, Ty Lue has seemed willing, like, hey, he doesn't have it. We're closing here. Here's some Eric Gordon. Here's some Terrence Mann. Here's XYZ. Like, I just like to see him more in, like, the earlier portions of games. I just think he's good on both ends of the floor. You kind of know what you're getting from him. But no red flag concerns. And with that, unless you have something else, we can go to Golden State. To the Dubs. 2 games over .500. A tough loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves last night. How many reserves do you trust on this team aside from Jonathan Kuminga?
Do we count Jordan Poole?
We can. Do you trust Jordan Poole?
Yeah. This man's a champion.
That's true.
Probably those two and Gary Payton.
Okay.
And if Dante shifts back to the bench, I'd add him. That's about it, though.
Okay. I mean, to be fair, like, if that's the group and they get Andrew Wiggins back, and again, I hope everything is okay with him. Like, 8 or 9 is all you need.
Yeah, that's the interesting part with me with the Warriors come playoff time, when they don't necessarily have to use the bench as much. Now, it could get interesting workload-wise, but we're going for it. We could just kind of mix and match a little bit more than, hey, these guys need to sit. Mm-hmm. How many do you trust? I got the over-under at 6.5. I took the under.
Oh, man. I trust Steph. I trust Clay. If Wiggins is back, I trust him. I trust Dre. I trust Kevon Looney. I trust GP2.
Oh, buddy, we hit that under. Come on.
Hey, we're not hitting the under. Gary is 6. Dante would be 7. That already hits the over.
Okay.
I've liked what I've seen from Kuminga. I just don't know how I feel about Jordan Poole's year. And maybe this is just my own expectations heading into the year. I was expecting, like, a true leap from him. And I just haven't loved a lot of the decision-making from him. This is also, like, the worst time for me to bring this up following, like, the step back he took towards the end of that Wolves game. But even aside from that, I haven't seen a ton of growth from him defensively. And he just kind of does his thing offensively. And it can work because he's a tremendous shot maker when he has it going. And the shots fell at a higher clip last year than this year. Am I overreacting? Because I could just be tripping. And I think full sort, but like he just gets knocked down to picking order. You don't have him making as many decisions as he does, and it doesn't matter. But like, it's getting a little harder to parse through that.
I mean, I don't think Jordan Poole was really supposed to be that in theory for this team. And he became that, and he continued to do that. And growth isn't always linear. So that's true. That man made a huge leap. And it's still giving you 20 a night. But part of giving him this time, giving him this movement to kind of, you're going to get some of this. This is some of the growing pains of now becoming that player and teams being more engaged with it. Teams being more prepared for it. You having to do it every single night. See, with this team, it's less of a luxury for Jordan Poole to be Jordan Poole. He kind of has to be Jordan Poole at a certain level. If he's not hitting those notes, it looks different because of expectation, because of how this team is built. If he was doing this last year, which I'm sure he did at times, it didn't hit the same. But I think it's just louder with what the Warriors currently are. And I think he's going to be too important for them in this stretch because eventually they're going to need to either execute a small lineup or close with him and two bigs, if you want to count Draymond. It doesn't work without him to a degree. And so it's just how much can you live with?
I got you. I guess that's just what I've been trying to battle. Like how much of it is like him and working through this stuff and how much of it is like it's him working through this stuff and they need him to be at a level because of what it's been for them this year. So it may just very well be it just feels louder. Or it feels worse because of where the Warriors are. So, and just trying to balance myself out. This is why I asked. This is why I need your perspective.
Do you believe in their defense enough, though?
I believe in Dre.
This is loony erasure.
It's not. He was next. But no, in all seriousness, I don't feel elite defense when I watch this group most nights. Do I think they can defend well enough to win? Yes. Because like even a down year for them, like they've still worked themselves up from where they were at the beginning of the year. So like I don't think they're a bad defense. I guess a secondary question I throw at you is like, do you feel better about them on the road now?
I feel better about them on the road in the playoffs.
Okay. Because that's where the defense is really tanked for them this year.
I think having a mindset, having a game plan, the lowered volume may help them. Mm-hmm. I made the point on the pod. I'll continue to make it. In theory, they would only have to win 4.
Use it as a checklist. But yeah, like I think just – and this is where getting Gary back and healthy, and we'll see like how quickly he's able to not rust off and stuff. I think this is where he helps and really provides some juice at the point of attack for them in his minutes. But I do think overall, like the perimeter containment just hasn't been the same. And a lot of that is just like, at least recently, a lot of that's just a byproduct of like Wiggins not being there. Everyone else gets bumped up the food chains in terms of the assignments they're getting. Whereas Wiggins would just get top option and then everyone else can slot in and it makes it a little bit easier to help, et cetera, et cetera. And so like some of that is in play as well. I do really trust their front court. Dre's insane and Kevon Looney is a good defender who can execute multiple schemes. I think that's going to be fine. I think Steph and Clay are smart enough off the ball. You get Gary in there. I don't know what I'm getting from Jordan Poole on any given night defensively. Jonathan Kuminga's been, he's just been good, period. Like, we talked about him a little bit earlier in the season, but what he's done post All-Star break, he just looks a lot more comfortable on both ends. So, like, they have enough personnel, even without Wiggins right now, to where I'm like, okay, they can operate like, just throw a random number out there, they can operate like the 12th best defense in the NBA. And if they do that combined with what Steph drives as an offensive guy, and what they get from Poole, what they've gotten from Clay, pretty much all year long, et cetera. Like, that's enough for them to be able to get wins in the postseason. You add in the championship pedigree, the experience, like, they have enough. So I think that's where I land. I think the defense is good enough. It's just not the level I've come to expect from them. I don't think, do I have any other Warrior questions? Like, the Warriors are just, they're interesting, a difficult team for me to kind of parse through an exercise like this, because it's like, well, we know what they can be because they just did it. It just kind of comes down to, are they going to do it or not? So I don't know if I have, I don't think I have any more like new questions for them. Did you have anything on Golden State?
No, I mean, I think they, this is a team, they are who they are. We've seen the foundation. We know it could get, it could take a hit, but if you're putting playoff defense together plus Stephen Curry, they're always going to give themselves a chance. And now it's just, hey, can they get the right path? Can they get the right matchup? Can they ramp it up a little bit on the defensive end? Mm-hmm. But then again, there's those nights where the turnovers are just out of this world.
Yeah, you can't have that.
The shot making isn't there. The paint touches aren't there. The cutting isn't there. So it's okay. They can hit the high notes, but how often can they? And for this particular Warriors group, can they afford those stretches? That's where I go.
Okay. Do you actually, glad you said that, do you worry about the rim pressure with them at all?
Not as much as traditionally because of the amount of cutting that they have. Mm-hmm. So they could put pressure on you in different ways that doesn't necessarily require driving kick. When they're moving that ball, when the splits are there, when the cuts are there, it's different. I guess my issue is, you do need some easy ones. And if teams are going to say, hey, we're just going to run you off the line and then protect the rim, how do they solve that portion of it in the playoffs? Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily that I'm going to watch Golden State and be like, oh, they're just passing the ball around the perimeter. That's not their game.
All right. A brief reminder, we will go over the East on Thursday, or I guess on Friday, depending on when you get the recording. Let's get into some free throws. Steve, do you have free throws?
Of course I do. Are you ready?
No, but
it's just the way we like it. Udonis Haslem will have a seating section at Miami's arena. Will you sit in it?
I doubt it. I think if I'm at Miami Arena or whatever they're calling it these days, I will be in the media section. And so that would preclude me from being there. It is a cool section, very well deserved.
The hashtag is big time, folks. Shout out to Jasmine. Is the real honor being the last one to leave?
There has never been a tweeter like Jasmine L. Watkins, let me tell you. Yes.
Okay. And last follow-up question on the UD section. Is it okay to propose from the Udonis Haslem section?
You know what? Only if you have, I don't want to phrase this. Only if you have like UD level tenure in your partnership.
Okay. Is Tristan Thompson pushing this Kyrie and LeBron thing so he can play with them?
Absolutely.
Okay. Austin Reeves said he learned the most from Rajon Rondo. Thoughts?
There's a lot of unpacking to do with that. I'm going to be honest. Yeah, I'm just going to leave it out alone.
Has anyone extended their career and adjusted to the new NBA more than Brooke Lopez?
He has a strong case. He has a very strong case.
Ah, look at you, sounding like Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett.
Hey, man.
Did Jordan Nwora absorb Chris Duarte's powers?
Oh, no. For Andy's sake, better hope not. Better hope Jordan's just good.
Did Rick Carlisle say, I get it, but look, pal, I'm playing one of them?
Absolutely.
Doesn't work for me, buddy. Spencer Dinwiddie, Mikal Bridges, and Cam Johnson have played more minutes as Nets than Kyrie, KD, and James Harden. Is that wild that they played more games?
Yeah, that's kind of wild. That's unfortunate.
Shout out to the hipster Nets. Who did it better, LeBron in Indiana or Kyrie in Charlotte?
Ah, you know what? What you want me to do with that?
Answer it.
My brother in hoop.
Okay, that's fine. Moving on. I understand. Better troll, hitting a too small or the toilet paper ad?
I'm so mad because I had a free throw about this.
Yes.
Oh,
yes. God. It's fine. You can save yours. We'll talk about it. Wilder reaction, LeBron to Patrick Beverly hitting that hook shot or LeBron to the Patrick Beverly hitting him with the too small after?
Definitely the latter.
Can you do a too small after a jump hook with no contact?
Like, no, you can't.
Oh, okay.
No,
okay.
That is not the heart of the celebration.
Well, technically, no. you shot it over them.
No.
So you're too small to contest.
That's not. No, absolutely not.
Okay. Nikias, have you ever felt that you were a spoon and you were used as a fork?
Yes, I don't want to talk about it.
All right. If you had to assign blame in Dallas between Luka, Kyrie, and the organization front office, how would you dole it out?
Well, I would say the front office.
How much, what percent do they get?
Like 99.
Okay. All right. Then that disqualifies you from this big agenda. Well done, sir.
Okay.
Speaking of big agenda, Kendrick Perkins said he has not seen a rookie like this in the last 10 years. Can you guess who he was talking about?
I haven't seen a rookie like this in the last 10 years. This is recent, so I don't think it's going to be Paolo here. We'll go off the cuff. Is it Walker Kessler?
It's Keegan Murray.
Keegan Murray. I would not have guessed that one.
No. Who is more fed up, Klay Thompson or Greg Popovich?
Is Klay still counting?
He just pointed to the championships yesterday in a press conference.
Oh, good Lord, so, man.
You know, they was asking about Jordan. You know, they was asking about Jordan Poole, and he said that right there. It seemed like he had no time to explain further. So, and Pop just said, "Hey, man, they kind of tapped out, bro. It's embarrassing."
Oh, jeez. Well, Pop just gave the interview about like how wholesome the coaching experience has been for him this year. So I'm going to go Klay by default.
Okay. That's it. That's all I had, man. What you got for me?
Okay. Thoughts on the Hornets defense lately?
Steve Clifford, pretty good at defense. Not surprised.
All right. There we go. Orlando's only a game back from 11th. It's not a question. Just wanted to sprinkle that in there. Are you worried about Luka?
I do feel like he's about to pull a holster with his jersey one of these days.
Ah, I see.
That man was running off screens, had 40 and 12, and Steve Clifford still had the Mavs in torture rack.
It's unfortunate. Related to your free throw question, are you a spoon or a fork?
Depends on the day.
I see. Better all-NBA case, Jaren Jackson Jr. at Ford or Brook Lopez?
All-NBA, like the all-NBA team?
Yes.
Oh, well.
Yeah, he thought I was going to ask about the other award, huh?
Yeah. As a forward, purely a forward?
Forward for Jaren. It'd be center for Brooke.
Oh, center for Brooke.
Okay. Better all-NBA case, Jaylen Brown at guard or Bam Adebayo at center?
Oh, by default, Bam at center.
Okay.
Also, Jaylen Brown, Malcolm Brogdon called him the best shooting guard in the league. So, and he, in fact, is a guard.
That's how that works. All right. More on brand. Pat Bev hitting the too small on LeBron or his Charmin post on IG?
Technically the second. That is a brand. a brand that we love.
There we go. We all use. Okay. Rank these players. Isaiah Joe, Malik Beasley, Corey Kispert.
Kispert's last.
Wow. Okay. Happy March. Go ahead.
Let's go Malik Beasley 2, Isaiah Joe 1.
All righty. More likely to make a deep playoff run from the play-in, Miami or New Orleans?
Ooh, Well, this feels like it was designed purely for me. Deep run from the play-in. Give me New Orleans.
Okay.
Maybe they get to 7, cause some havoc with Memphis. Yeah.
Okay. Why do so many NBA players hate French toast? What am I missing?
It's just bread.
It's just, bro.
It's just bread. It's just bread. You dip it and then cook it up real quick.
This is disgusting content.
Nobody want to compare. I got chicken and waffles here. I got pancakes stuffed with something. I got this soggy bread over here, man.
Soggy bread. How dare you? Okay. Oh, I'm not about to get upset before this watch party. Better chance at winning the title in the near future, the Mavs or Cody Rhodes?
Cody Rhodes, for sure.
Okay.
1,000,000%.
All right.
I think I got Cody Rhodes over most of the field right now.
Okay.
I mean, if not, that man is about to be the Lex Express 2.0.
Ah, I see. Who gets moved first, Dame or Lamar Jackson?
Ooh, buddy, Lamar.
Okay. Who do you trust more late in the game, Tyrese Maxey, Tyler Hero, or Jordan Poole?
Oh, buddy. Well, this is interesting. Trust more to do what? Or just trust in general?
Yes.
Well, never know what Jordan Poole's going to do, but you know he's going to do something. Tyler Hero.
You never know what he's going to do, but he's going to do something.
The defensive part worries me because sometimes it's like, hey, man, you did the thing, but then you're still here. Why are you still here? Get out of here. I guess Tyrese by default, but then again, they'll like draw up a play for him and he'll be like, oh, here, I'm going to swing it. And I'm like, no, the play's for you. I was like, oh, my bad. So Tyrese Maxey.
Okay. Last one from me. Who would you trust more to get you 30 points against the Golden State Warriors? Chris Paul or Rudy Gobert?
Oh, buddy. Oh, Chris Paul.
Okay. How about that? Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Please join The Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having lots of fun in there. Join the Dunker Spot watch parties. Plenty of analysis, plenty of antics. We will have the link in the podcast description. If it's hyperlinked for you, whichever app you listen to the podcast on, click that, enter your information. It's free, no hassle, no shenanigans. If not, just copy and paste the link into your browser, download the app. Again, it's free, no shenanigans involved. Come watch some hoops with us, or wrestling, or bowling, or baseball, or The Bachelor, or more wrestling, or whatever else we toss on the screen. Honestly, we do a little bit of everything. Right, watch some 2K just like we did over the weekend. Lots of things go on in the Dunker Spot watch parties. Come have some fun with us. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Now this man wants to mention 2K. I don't want to talk about it.